see that coming about. And Pedrosa has gone down. Danny Pedrosa has gone. I wonder if they did actually come out.
And welcome to Motopod, the internet radio show all about motorcycle road racing. This is episode number 381 for Wednesday, the 2nd of October, 2013. My name is Harry Lloyd, and I'm here with Jim Race. How's it going, Jim?
Good. I'm over here in the Northern California. You are over in the somewhere in the UK, right?
Yeah, and down in the Kent, in the Canterbury, as Dave so elegantly put when I was on the phone with him.
Welcome back to the show, Harry. While we mentioned that this was Wednesday, the 2nd of October, it is currently Saturday, the 5th of October, coincidentally, the day before my birthday. Thank you very much.
Happy birthday.
Thank you. And I'm sure all of you out there are saying the exact same thing. Yes, no, maybe, probably not. We do not have any interviews this week yet. Possibility they might get one or two this afternoon. Harry, I will let you know. But in the meantime, Harry and I have got a lot to talk about. We're going to talk about last week's races at Laguna Seca and Aragon in Spain. We'll just kind of run through those briefly because at this point you all know about them. And obviously we're on to another weekend of racing. We've got racing going on in Magny-Cours, France, with World Superbike, as well as BSB at Silverstone. And we can kind of catch you up on those, too, since we're running a little bit late. Yeah, it happens. In the meantime, speaking of running a little bit late, I have been extremely lame, and I don't believe there's another word that describes that more accurately, over the last month or even more, in mentioning the lovely people that help keep Motopod afloat. And so I took some time today, and I went back all the way to the beginning of August, which means that I may include some duplications from people that I mentioned in prior episodes, but I did not want to leave anybody out, because you guys are what power Motopod. We're simply here talking to each other, saying foolish things, and making idiots of ourselves.
Yep, that sounds about right.
But we're quite professional about it, and we're very well-schooled in the art of doing so. Without further ado, I'm going to run through these. These are donators going back again to the beginning of August. Pierre Luigi Marzani, Rick Taylor. These are actually new subscribers, by the way. Rick Taylor, Paul Creevy, Simon Stanford, Raymond Jepson, and James McDowell. Those are folks that are doing the recurring subscription. Thank you very much. Totally appreciate it. The next group is one-off donors. Some of these may be subscribers. It's hard to tell. It's very difficult for me with the interface that I have to look at this. But regardless, I just want to make sure these people are thanked and thanked well. They would be Alan Pett, John Hart, big John Hart, does it all the time. Claude Nolan, thank you very much, Claude. Gareth Locke, another longtime gentleman that's been helping us out with the show. Dan Lowe, photographer extraordinaire. Missed him down at Laguna Seca because I didn't go, which is unfortunate. Edward Valio, Len Padilla, who is also a host on the show. Len, thank you very much. Generous donation prior to Indy. Tony Pagliori, or Anthony Pagliori. Benjamin Himes, Skyler Vicroy. Hello, Skyler. Darren Moore, Michael Way, and John Short. All of those people. Thank you so much. If you'd like to help contribute to the show, go to motopodcast.com, left-hand side of the page, about halfway down, scroll down a little bit. You'll see a couple of yellow boxes. You can either do a one-off donation or a subscription. It's pretty simple to do. And I'll talk about that more at the end of the show so you guys can get filled in. But in the meantime, boy, Harry, we got an awful lot to talk about. We did not jot down any listener feedback this week. Although we did get some emails in, so I'm going to move that to next week, so we'll have something to talk about, even though we will anyway. But in the meantime, you managed to put down a whole bunch of good stuff here, and I'm going to let you run with this until you run out of breath, because I think I just ran out of breath.
Okay, no worries. So there was it's getting to that point in the season where there's a lot of news, a lot of new seats coming up in different championships, and the new AMA champ, Josh Herron, he has joined the Caterham team in Moto2 next year. Caterham currently running F1, but when they come over to Moto2 next year, they'll be running Suda chassis, and it seems that Johan Zarco will be his teammate. Asphalt and Rubber had originally reported that Herron was joining Mahindra in Moto2, which seemed like a bit of a surprise, but it turned out that they'd misheard him at the AMA awards banquet. In some more Moto2 news, Julian Simon and Taki Nakagami are staying with the Italitrans Kallax team for next year. There'd been a bit of rumours that Nakagami might move up with Tadi Okada to MotoGP and race some of the production Hondas, but obviously that deal fell through. And then there was an even stranger rumour that Julian Simon might move back down to Moto3 to race with the Calvo team. But luckily that didn't come to fruition, because Julian Simon has been up and down between 250s and 125s and Moto2 a fair bit.
Yeah, he's well-travelled.
Yeah, and I think he's getting to the age where he can't race anymore in Moto3. And yep. A lot like that age, Vasquez has signed for another year in Moto3, but this time with Racing Team Germany. I'm pretty sure they'll have Hondas next year, but you never know. And Vasquez is another one, a bit like Hector Faubel last year, where Vasquez is currently 27, so next year he'll turn 28. And 28 is the cutoff age for being able to race in Moto3. So I'm not really sure how strict Dorna are with that rule.
Yeah, well, if I remember, didn't they bump it up from like mid-20s at one point? And I think that was in order to support... Who was it? Was it Tomashi?
Because he was quite old for 125s.
I remember actually seeing him last year at Indy. He was just kind of hanging out in the pits. I thought it was cool. Carry on.
So in more Moto3 news, it looks like Honda are going to put in a big effort next year. There's a rumor going around the paddock that they'll be taking over the Estrella Galicia team with Alex Rins and Alex Marquez. And they'll be putting in a lot of support to try and beat KTM. This is a pretty drastic departure from what we were hearing towards the start of the season, where there were whispers that Honda were just going to say, fuck it, and just completely pull out of Moto3, which would have been a pretty big disaster.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, and it's interesting, because I think they're doing that primarily because they saw what happened in 250s near the end, with Aprilia becoming so dominant, and they just, I think that they can't stand that. They don't want to see a one horse race, and they, you know, you never know what's going to happen, whatever changes might come down the pike for Moto3 rules wise, even though I think it's working pretty well right now. But we don't want to see a single manufacturer dominating class. Nobody likes that, frankly.
Yeah, exactly.
So, yeah, carry on.
And then in more Honda news, Casey Stoner is going to do a lap of honor with Wayne Gardner and Mick Doohan around Phillip Island. So all those lucky fans will get to see Casey go around one more time. They haven't said what sort of bike.
Although he has been going around.
Yeah, he has been going around. Yeah. He was also testing the 2013 RC213V and the production racer in Motegi. Again, there was rain that interrupted the test, and they didn't release any official times, but it seems like the production bike was within about half a second of the factory bike, which was pretty good, because at the start of the year I'd heard that they were aiming to be about a second off. So if they're even less than that, that's a pretty strong bike.
Now, it'll be interesting. It'll be interesting if it's that competitive, what kind of parts they start pulling up at that point.
Yeah. Yeah, that, or what difference Stoner makes on it compared to other riders.
True, true. And you have to wonder, you know, the differences aren't that big of a deal. You know, the full ECU, spring versus pneumatic valves, a couple of other bits and pieces. No seamless gearbox. I don't know, you know, and what is the true cost of those going to be when they come around? I'll be honest, I didn't think it was going to happen at all. Now, it may not be cost competitive to do so. Next year is going to be very interesting, especially over the winter holidays, when nobody gets to test anyway. Was January 15th or 28th or something like that is our comeback and ride time again. So I think, well, it's January 15th, I think, for World Superbike. There was some interesting news today that came out about that. And well, I'll try and remember to talk about it, the whole Evo thing, everybody going Evo.
Yeah.
But in the meantime, one other thing that we did hear about, and this is more generalized, but at least for 2014, and you're probably not up on this yet, Harry, for 2014, MotoGP will not be returning to Laguna Seca, and that is primarily a cost issue. They basically, when the recession hit, they started losing money, and they've been losing money for about the past, you know, three years or so.
Yeah.
But Jill Campbell says, and she's the lady that runs Laguna Seca, that she's not giving up on MotoGP. And she would like to bring them back if it can be done so in a financially responsible sort of way. She loves having motorcycles at Laguna Seca, and I can swear that's true because she is always out and about whenever they are running. Very visible person in the paddock, a nice person. In the meantime, what she also said was that she's considering trying to bring the World Superbike round instead of in September, where it kind of clashes with local sports, because there's two very large football teams that kind of take away on the weekends attendance that might be attending the Laguna Seca round for World Superbike, and moving it back to July into the slot that the MotoGP folks took. But that means that they have to juggle things with Dorna / Infront as far as schedules go. And so we'll have to see how that works out. Currently, though, on the World Superbike schedule, that is marked as TBD. So to be decided, we'll see. But it sounds like World Superbike is a go next year, which is good because I was really bummed that I didn't get there this year. So that's my 2 cents about Laguna. Carry on, Harry.
In some Moto 2 news, this was pretty surprising. I think this came out earlier today, maybe late yesterday. Danny Kemp had signed a contract for 2014 to stay with the Tech 3 Moto 2 team. And yep. Then suddenly it was announced that he wasn't going to ride for them next year. And he'll be replaced by Alex Madaniata. I think that's how you say his last name, at least. He had a wild card. He replaced one of the Aventura riders this season as well. But yeah, it was announced that Danny Kemp won't be in the team. Lots of people had different theories as to why he'd left. It hasn't been specifically said, but it seems like the hot rumour is that he'll go back to Moto 3, probably with Mahindra, to try and earn some money, develop that bike, and maybe push for the title as well.
It'll be interesting. It will also be interesting with the Mahindra to Moto 2 that was misannounced, if they do have intentions of coming up to Moto 2. That whole thing got really weird. Yeah. To be honest.
There's some emails sent that were a bit weird, but anyway.
Yeah. carry on.
Gino Rea has secured a couple more wild cards. He's now doing all three of the flyaway rounds, replacing Alberto Moncoya for the Arginal Racing team. It just seems like Moncoya's results weren't quite up there, so they've decided to bring in Gino Rea. And he'll be racing the speed-up bike instead of the FTR he's been running all year, but he'll be back in Valencia on his FTR. So it's good that he's getting some more time on the bike, because as I'm sure you remember, last year in Sepang, in the wet, he got on the podium with a very impressive ride on the Suda and was battling hard with Alex DeAngelis and Ant West.
Yep.
So that's good to see. And now we come to Superbike news, and some not very surprising news that Jonathan Rea and Leon Haslam will stay with Pata Honda for next year and hopefully get a bike that's a bit more competitive and not have to struggle as much as they have, and also hopefully avoid some injury, because I think both of them have now broken their femurs this season, which is pretty grim.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And then, as Carlos Checa continues to suffer with his broken hip, Michele Pirro has been called in to replace him on the Panigale, and we'll get to how he's doing in a second.
I would not be surprised if we have seen the last of Carlos Checa on a superbike.
Yeah, that would also not surprise me. He's getting on in years a bit, and a broken hip's pretty serious.
Yeah.
And then finally in BSB news, Josh Waters has come back and taken the seat that Tommy Bridewell occupied when he took his seat. So Josh Waters is now with a Hazel Kawasaki racing team, and Bridewell is what was his original Milwaukee Yamaha seat. So they did a bit of a swapsies there.
Yep. On the AMA front, with Josh Herron going to Moto 2 with perhaps KTM. Yeah. We'll see if that's for sure. So he's vacating his championship spot with the Graves Yamaha team. Cameron Beauvier, who's quite the rising star, this year's Daytona Sport Bike Champion, former Moto, was it 125 GP?
Yeah,
or was
125.
Yeah. As well as Red Bull Rookie Cup rider, will be moving up to be teammates with Josh Hayes, former AMA Superbike Champion 3-time. So that'll be still a very strong team and an obvious contender in the American AMA series. All right, I think we've got most of that through, and I'm sure there's going to be more. It is, as you say, Harry, it's a very busy time on the internet airwaves with rumors flying and all sorts of stuff that's going on. I rely primarily on press releases. I have you out there in the land of Oz following Twitter and everything else to keep me up on the more interesting sides of the exchange.
Yeah, you definitely hear some crazy stuff on Twitter.
Yep, absolutely. But it's a great resource. You just have to have a very good bullshit filter. All right, let's talk about Aragon from last week, and we'll try and skim through this because, as I said, most of you people already know what's going on. And Harry, since I haven't really dived into it yet, I'm going to let you lead this, my friend.
Okay, well, we'll start with Moto 3. Qualifying was a pretty standard affair. Alex Rins took pole, Vinales second, Marquez third. But what was a bit of a surprise was Philipp Ertl. He got a surprise fourth on his Calyx KTM. And this is kind of the first race that we've seen a former front runner in the Red Bull rookies right up there. So that's good to see.
Yep.
And then Maria Herrera, Spanish wildcard, who has won two rounds in the SEV series. She started the weekend off very well. She was running at top 10 pace. But then as the weekend went on, she struggled a bit and she qualified in 31st, which was a bit unfortunate.
Mm-hmm.
The Hondas really struggled at Aragon due to that back straight. Jack Miller, who's usually up there on those front two rows, was down in 20th, which was very disappointing for the young Australian.
Although I do have to say that he probably has the best wheelies in Moto 3.
Oh, easily. Especially when him and Arthur Cecis come together on the cooldown lap. They'll always try and outwheel each other. And as soon as they see a photographer, they pull the front wheel right up.
Yep.
It's good to see. The Moto 3 race is pretty exciting, as it always is. Alex Rins and Maverick Vinales, they broke away at the front. And Marquez followed them for a tiny bit, but he dropped back eventually. And Rins and Vinales, they battled for most of the race. It was pretty good. But then, as he has with almost every race this year, Vinales just couldn't beat Rins on that last lap battle. He ended up losing by 0.4 of a second, and he kept doing that thing where he sits up and lets Rins catch up and lets Rins run at the front, and I don't know, he personally does that too much for my liking. I mean, I can understand how that sort of mental game would work, but it seems like every time he does it, he just ends up coming in second instead of first.
It's the old Fabian Foray, I look behind myself too much ploy. self-distracting, if you will.
So yeah, Lewis Salom qualified 8th and then finished in 4th, so that was a good fight back from him, but the championship's now closed right up. So I can see the Moto3 championship going down to Valencia, whereas perhaps especially GP's opened up a bit and Moto2 a tiny bit as well. And then getting on to Moto2 news, or Moto2 results rather, Nico Tirol had an excellent weekend. He stormed a pole with a 153.8, and then Tito Rabat, potentially the worst or best teammate in the world, depending on if you're in the 20 HP Pons or the Mark VDS team, took second, and then a pole qualified in third. Redding had a really tough time. He complained a lot about traffic, and obviously his size down the straight we mentioned before, that really hurt him, and he qualified down in 13th.
And going into Eric, I mean, probably the number one complaint that he had last year about weight and whatnot was about Aragon. That was one track where no matter what he did, coming out of a corner quick ahead of Marquez, Marquez would just blow past him on any of the straightaways. So you kind of expected him to come into here this year with A, a little bit more confidence perhaps, and B, perhaps not an advantage over the situation that he had last year, but that did not go to plan.
No, yeah, Redding's still just that tiny bit too big, and I mean, it's nothing he can do. You can only lose so much weight before it starts hindering you.
Right.
He also had an arm pump operation, so had, I think it was about 5 or 6 inches worth of staples in his arm, which was pretty grim.
It was impressive looking, though.
Oh, impressive is one word for it. Oh, I would not want to have raced with them. They looked nasty. So then we come to the Moto2 race. Tirol continued his excellent form from the weekend and pretty much broke away from the word go. Tirol had been apparently suffering from a lactose intolerance problem. much like Stoner a couple of years ago. And so he said that they sorted that and they'd had a test with the bike and they'd found a really good setting for getting that extra bit of grip. So he had his second win of the season. And he's looking like he'll come strong at this end half of the year and then next year for where he's staying with the Aspar team. But then the real exciting part of the Moto2 race was the three-way battle between Tito Rabat, Pol Espargaró and Scott Redding. And for most of the race, it was mostly Espargaró and Redding who were dicing, especially towards the last bits. But Rabat definitely didn't follow any team orders as he stormed through Pol and attempted to chase down Tirol. But I can't imagine that Pol was too happy back in hospitality when they were having lunch. There may have been a stern look or two thrown across the hospitality. But yeah, Redding and Espargaró, they went down to the line basically. And as you said, Redding suffered down the straight pretty much any time. He'd fight back hard through the tighter and twistier bits, but then he'd just lose it down the straight. And I think it was the last lap, Redding came up the inside of Espargaró into the last corner, and he looked at him, almost dead in the eyes, tilted full over on the bike, just leaned his head across and stared him in the eyes, and you could tell him just thinking, should I run him wide, should I run him wide, should I run him wide? Luckily, he decided that it was better to just take the points and both keep them on, but that was some exciting stuff, seeing him just sit up and just stare Pol in the eyes. Callio then also came in fifth, just behind him. Jordi Torres in sixth. And Nakagami, he had a problem very early in the race, so ran on. So he was down in 11th, but his pace was definitely up there to be running with the likes of Redding and Espargaró.
And the two gentlemen that were out, former occasional contenders, De Angelis and West.
Yeah, they both had crashes. Alex De Angelis' crash was actually a bit nasty. He got, I think it was Cortese who touched him, and then De Angelis got flung off. That was a bit scary, but luckily everyone was okay.
These could be hitmen from his MotoGP days, having been hired. He back in the day, you remember he used to have the nickname of Alex the Dangerous.
Yeah, where was it, Misano, when he and Nicky Hayden had a few stern words?
Oh, yes, I believe that crash also took Colin out, did it not?
I think both Colin and Nicky had some things to say about Italian driving.
Mm-hmm.
I think there's a YouTube video of that if you search for it.
I'm sure.
Then MotoGP. QP1, it was pretty much always going to be between Bradley Smith, Andrea Iannone, and Yoni Hernandez. Hernandez has obviously now switched to the Pramac bike. Hernandez actually really impressed me for his first time out on the Pramac bike. In QP1, he was under 0.3 of a second from Andrea Iannone, his teammate who's been on the bike the whole year. So that was very impressive. But it was eventually Bradley Smith and Andrea Iannone who just snuck into QP2. Obviously, Alicia Spargaró had already gotten to QP2 because that's what he does every time.
Remind me, and my apologies because everybody out there probably knows this, but because I haven't even seen it yet. What was the weather like at Aragon over the weekend?
Saturday, it was pretty fine. It was a bit cold. Saturday morning, the first session was damp, so that was a bit wasted. But otherwise, it was okay. It was maybe a bit on the cool side, but not too bad.
Okay.
And then we get to Q2, and it was between Marquez, Lorenzo, and Pedrosa. All of them were pretty close to each other, and Rossi was also up there. But as he's done before, Marquez got pole. The Wonder Kid strikes again. And he just beat Jorge by, what's that, by 0.01. So Jorge was just behind him. And then Pedrosa was another 0.1 of a second from Jorge. And Valentino was another 10th from Pedrosa. So those top four were all really close. And all of them had a good pace. So it was pretty exciting going into the race. And then we get to the MotoGP race, which is obviously there's been a lot of discussion about some incidents that happened in the race.
Especially the incident.
Yes, especially the incident. So I don't think we need to talk too much about the race, but I think we should probably voice our opinions on what we think happened in the incident. Jim, you said you haven't watched the race, right? Do you have any ideas about the incident or?
Oh, no, absolutely, because the one part that I have watched is the incident. My opinion is that it was, let me put it this way. Did Marquez brake too late? Yes. Did he contact Danny? Yes. Did the contact itself cause Danny to crash? No. did something that happened during the contact, that being a relatively exposed wire that controlled the traction control for the rear wheel on the RCV213V, was that damaged? Yes, it was. Is that Marquez's fault and something he should be penalized? I say no.
Yeah, I'm pretty much in agreement with you. I mean, it's one of those just freak accidents where 99 times out of 100, nothing will happen. But Marquez just happened to get it at that angle where it hit that really exposed wire. I mean, you'd think that for something that important, they'd put a bit of carbon fiber over it, or at least some more protection, because there are a lot of photos going around Twitter and everywhere, and that wire was not protected at all, which seems a bit odd.
Yeah. I bet you they already have, eh? Ducati uses two sensors on the rear wheel. Couldn't hurt to have a little bit of redundancy. It doesn't help them so much, but maybe they should take one off.
Yeah.
I think what you're seeing is you're seeing a pro Marquez or an anti Marquez camp, where people are saying if they like Marquez, or if they're objective, they say no big deal. If they don't like Marquez, he's dangerous. He should be, you know, kicked out for a couple of races. In fact, I even saw an article, and I forget who it was from, and I wish that I'd remembered, but it was one of the smaller blog-type news outlets that quoted Rossi, because Rossi said something very funny. And I think it was post-race, and they asked Valentino what he thought of the incident between Marquez and Pedrosa. And Valentino said, he said, I think he should be penalized and put out of the sport for 2 to 3 years. And then he laughed and he said, or at least until I retire. Well, this relatively fly-by-night publication decided to only post the first part, leaving out the last part where Valentino laughed and said, or at least until I retire. Like Valley is, you know, all pissed off at Marquez. I think it's a bunch of crap. Now, we do know that come the Malaysia round, they'll be announcing the results of an investigation, but I did read something on MotoGP.com where it was a gentleman that works alongside Mike Webb in race control. I forget his name, last name, Alonso, I believe, who said in one part of the conversation, Marquez could try and do that 1,000 times and he might succeed once. So that tells me that they are also looking at it as a relatively freak accident. It's clear that Mark wasn't trying to barge his way through. In fact, he was trying to avoid running in the back of Danny. So I say, let's just say it was one of those things. And can we move on and talk about something else? And certainly not talk about 2006. Thank you. The comparisons there were driving me nuts. My God, let it go. We should probably, well, what other incidents occurred that were of interest? We did have a few guys out of the race, obviously.
Yeah. Hector Barbera, he had engine troubles, so it switched to his second bike, and then that bike also had troubles. Damien Cudlin, who was wildcarding with the PBM team, he had a gear selector problem, so I don't think he could get out of third.
Well, that's a good gear.
Yes, at least in the middle. I mean, it's not like he was stuck in first, but yeah. He had to pull in. And then Daniello Petrucci and Michael Laverty, who had switched to the ART bike, they had it coming together on the first lap, so they were out.
And yeah, Michael wasn't too happy about that.
No. And then obviously since Pedrosa crashed out because of the traction control issue, that left Rossi, Bautista, Bridle, and Crutchlow to battle for third, and Rossi won that battle quite handily in the end by about 0.8 of a second. He was able to pull it out towards the end. So Rossi got back up on the podium. So he was happy to not get another fourth, I think.
Let me ask you a question, because you and I haven't had an opportunity to talk much. What are your impressions now, and what were they at the beginning of the season on Bautista?
I don't know. I've always felt a bit mixed about Bautista. I thought when he was on the Suzuki, he did very well for what that bike was and how much it had been developed at that point. I could never fully understand why he got that ride with Gresini. He always seemed to be good, but not that level of good. Like, especially where factory bikes have now become so limited, I couldn't fully understand it. Him and Barbera always seem like they're a bit, I don't know, a bit in the middle. And then, yeah, this year he's gotten a bit, well, especially at the start of the year, he's cleaned up now, but at the start of the year he's pretty dangerous. I mean, in Mugello, that was something else. I was at that race and you just saw 10,000 Rossi fans get up and leave almost as soon as he'd taken them out. But, yeah, I don't know, Bautista, I can't really see him keeping his ride after next year. I think Redding or someone will take it.
Interesting. But I would have to say that compared to the 2012 season, he's certainly come on.
Yeah, definitely. He's definitely up there now a lot more consistently.
Right. And I also have to give props to Bridle. In fact, if there's anybody that I've seen kind of slip a little bit, it's probably been Cal as we've been moving on to the season.
Yeah, Cal ever since getting the new fuel tank that he'd been wanting so much, he seems to have had a bit of a dip now. He's not really qualifying as well as he used to, and now he's finishing sixth instead of fourth, and it's interesting to see him have a bit of a dip. But
yeah, I think part of it too is I think he kind of winds himself up a little bit.
Yeah, but yeah, now. Maybe. And I'm sure all those crashes at Silverstone didn't help.
Nope, not a bit, not a bit. All right, so where are we in the points, sir?
So in the points, we have Marc Marquez, at least for now, with 278 points. I mean, in theory, he could get docked points, but hopefully that doesn't happen. Then Jorge Lorenzo is on 239 points, and Danny Pedrosa drops back to 219 points, which pretty much rules him out of any title challenge, at least in my opinion. I mean, it's looking pretty tough for Jorge as it is. I think Mark can finish third in every race and still win the title, so
not good. We never know.
Yeah, true, you never know, but it's looking tough. And then Rossi is on 185, and Cal Crutchlow is on 156, so it looks like Cal Crutchlow is probably also going to have a tough time overtaking Rossi for fourth.
So we're, except for at the top, well, we're actually fairly well spread out if you look at it. All right, so MotoGP is taking the week off this weekend. We do have World Superbike going on at MagniCore, but in the meantime, let's just do a quick recap of last weekend at Laguna Seca. And I'm not even going to go through qualifying because, like I said, you guys probably are already in on this. We'll talk about race one of World Superbike at Laguna, which was, to be honest, it was a bit of a clusterfuck.
Those air fences.
Yeah, it was a three-part race. The first two parts of which were basically dominated by Sylvain Guintoli, and which didn't quite work out in the end. It was quite unhappy. The first bit of the race, Danny Ezlik went off in turn five, had mild contact with the air fence, which unfortunately caused it to deflate.
I think his exhaust pipe burnt a hole in it, I think.
Yeah, well, it's pretty resilient stuff, but a lever or whatever can lay it to waste. And I know that they didn't even bother trying to reinflate it. They just took it out and threw in a new section. That stuff is not cheap. That's about $3,000 per section, something like that. Oh. So, it's absolutely necessary. And so we went back, we got it started once again, and in turn four, maybe about four or five laps in, we first saw, I believe, Leon Haslam go down in turn four, shortly thereafter followed by Roger Hayden. And so we had a little bit of oil on the circuit that caused a red flag at that point. So Van Guintoli had been leading once again. He got two great hole shots in the first sections. And it was looking real good for him, and which is impressive because he was in there with still having pain from his shoulder from a prior race. And then the third round, he did not get the whole shot. In fact, Eugene Laverty did. Guintoli and Sykes came together actually over turn one, between turn one and turn two, not to any great detriment, but from there on in, Guintoli just started sliding down the results. And as we ended up with that, and it was quite the run by Chaz Davis there at the end, and Tom Sykes coming up through the pack, we had Tom Sykes, Chaz Davis, and Eugene Laverty for race one. It was some good stuff. It was fun to watch race three.
Three races definitely didn't help Guintoli's shoulder.
Not at all. And it probably didn't help his clutch either. It made you wonder how much work they were taking the opportunity.
Yeah, I think it was on the Eurosport commentary, they asked Witham how many starts a clutch can have, and I think he said about two before it starts to get funky.
Yep. Yep. I should go back and listen to the one with Widom and Burnicle, because those are always fun. Race two, thankfully, was a flag-to-flag affair, although, actually, I think it was one of the best World Superbike races of the season. And from memory, I can't sit there and tell you how many changes occurred at the front, but I can tell you the guys that were battling up there were quite impressive, including Chaz Davis, who unfortunately went out late in the race. I was quite unhappy, and I wasn't too pleased about that either. But you had Eugene Laverty, Davide Giuliano, who came on extremely strong. That was very, very impressive, battling his way through. In fact, in the entire race until the end, it was amazing how much stability he had on the Ducati. Tom Sykes was also up there, and he spent a lot of time leading that. He led the most laps over the weekend. But he faded near the end with probably tires issues. Sylvain Guintoli was up there, but he got clobbered at the end. He just slid down. There were some very aggressive passes in turn 11, the final corner on the circuit. Guintoli tried some of those as well, but just couldn't quite nail it. So it wasn't like but at a certain point with maybe two or three laps left, I won't say he gave up. I think he just became resigned to his position. And unfortunately, with not getting on the podium in either of those races, even though he looked like a contender, he's in dire trouble for this year's potential championship. And it looks like unless he gets wins here at Magny Cours and in the final round, he could be in some big, big trouble. So I don't know. What do you race two? You find that enjoyable?
Yeah, I mean, both Superbike races were pretty good. Race one, when it was running, was good, but it was a bit of a hassle to have it stop starting every five seconds, basically. But yeah, race two was definitely good. I mean, the last couple of Superbike races have definitely been very good, and it's kind of a shame that Superbike can't get the crowds there. There was someone on Twitter who told me that he said the crowd was about a quarter of what it was for GP at Laguna Seca. I don't know if you had more friends there, probably, but
it's a shame. I would say that's probably close to accurate. I think part of it was what we were talking about earlier, which is not necessarily the best time of weather-wise. It's a great time of year. The weather there was spectacular all weekend. In the low to mid 70s all weekend, track temperature was good. There were no real problems with tires at all. So well done, Pirelli. But yeah, you're right. The attendance was not very good. I think they have thoughts on how to handle that for next year. I think the big reason not a lot of people went was because I didn't go. So oh wow, did I say I didn't say that? I think we're going to see a big change in attendance next year, particularly as MotoGP will not be there. And I think there was also a bit of animosity, because we'll talk about this in a moment, but the final AMA round of the year was being run, and due to some extremely miscited, poorly managed stuff on the part of the AMA management, AMA Pro Racing, that being Daytona Motorsports Group, there was no TV for the final fucking round of the year. Are you kidding me?
They didn't even have TV in the pit, right? They couldn't even follow their ride or track.
As it turned out, they actually did.
Oh, okay.
So somewhere there was a recording of that race. Now, whether that will actually come out...
Some mechanic has it on his phone.
Well, no, what has been discussed in kind of quietly in back channels is, you know, anybody could have hooked a DVR up to their, you know, their TV in their pit box and recorded that thing up. So I would bet, or at the very least, yeah, hold up your phone and record it. I know that, what was it? There was a Superbike race a couple back, and I forget where I was watching, but as it turns out, Pippa, who is Eugene Laverty's girlfriend, will actually turn her iPad towards the little monitor in next to where Eugene sits while like qualifying is going on. And she will play back particular parts of and record it and play back particular parts of those for Eugene right when he comes in. So he can see those. Pippa's a smart girl. So I can see the same thing happening with somebody in the AMA channel. I do not know of any recording, and if I did, I probably wouldn't say it on the show. So there you go. But anyway, I'd like to talk about what our results were for that. We've already kind of given him most of it away, but your top three were Josh Hayes, who won, but he did not have enough leeway to get by Josh Herron, who won the championship this year. So good for you, Josh Heron. Good for you, Josh Hayes. He will be sticking around next year, but Heron is off to the Europe. That'll be interesting because he's still kind of young and he's very American. He's not spent a lot of time in Europe, so we'll have to see how he can handle it.
Especially if he does join up with Caterham, because they're a new team, and
yeah,
new teams are always interesting.
But you never know. You never know. Hopefully, it won't be like the Cube. You know, an F1 team coming in going, oh, we got this. Well, there's not a whole lot they can do with the motor, is there?
Yeah.
And then Larry Pegram, his first podium in quite some time. All three gentlemen on Yamaha R1, so a sweep for Yamaha and a great way for them to close out the year. Too bad we couldn't see it on TV. And I will leave it at that. That is it for AMA for the year. Let us back up a little bit. And let's, since it is Saturday afternoon, or evening, in your case, late evening, we did have the last 2 days, the gentleman out at Magny-Cours running World Superbike. You want to walk us through a little bit of that? Because you actually are closer to it, and you spent a lot of time on Twitter today.
Yeah, since I have no social life.
I know. I'm going to pass this on to our listeners, because nothing is sacred. Harry and I have been trying to coordinate getting the show together all this week, and we've been rather uncoordinated about it, but we finally put it together today on Saturday. But there was an email exchange going back this morning, and Harry said, oh, yeah, I'll be free all night. And this being Saturday, I wrote back to him, and I said, dude, you're in college. You're going to be free all night. What's wrong with you?
I work a lot of nights during the week. I'm tucking out. I need my sleep.
All right, well... if there's any of you young ladies out there in the UK that are falling in love with Harry's voice, apparently the poor guy could use a date, so help him out. All right, that's my plug for you, Harry. Carry on, sir.
Oh, thanks. Anyway, so in typical Magny-Cours fashion, it's been pretty much wet the entire weekend for every session. Towards the end of Superpole, it got a bit dry, so there were some riders putting on intermediates and even qualifiers to try and get that one lap out. Sykes, in usual style, was able to get that one lap out and put in a very impressive 138.592, followed by Gintoli with a 139.397, so almost a second difference there, which is pretty big, even for Superpole. And then David Gigliano was third, Eugene Laverty fourth. He said that he'd put on the wrong sort of tyre, so thought it best just to settle for fourth rather than try and push it and risk a crash. Then Michel Fabrizio on the Pata Honda, he came in fifth. Artin Badavini actually had a really good run on the Panigale and came in sixth. Melandri and Davies were seventh and eighth, and they struggled a bit. Pirro was tenth on his, not his Superbike debut, but his debut on the Panigale. Tiger Tony was 11th, which was still a pretty solid result. Haslam 15th, and then the usual Aitchison, Sandy, and Iannuzzi were down the bottom. But the race looks pretty interesting for tomorrow. I mean, Gintoli seems to have a pretty decent pace. So does Gigliano, and Laverty, you can't rule him out. I don't think Fabrizio or Badavini will be there, but hopefully Melandri and Davies will be able to charge through and keep up with Sykes.
I think a lot of it's going to be down to what kind of weather we end up with during race time tomorrow, and what options the riders are going to have as far as tires go. Pirelli does make a good rain tire, we know that much. But if we've got mixed conditions, that is always where World Superbike can end up being very, very interesting.
Yeah, well, especially with their new flag-to-flag rule, where
right.
Everyone just stays out on dry tires in the wet and sees who can crash last.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Then in World Supersport, Kenyan Sofuoglu, he stormed to pole. He was ahead of Alex Lowes by 0.6 of a second, but Sofuoglu had a very nasty crash at the end of the session and red-flagged. I think there were about 5 minutes left, so they just canned the session there. But he had a crash. The bike was absolutely destroyed, but luckily Sofuoglu was okay. Sam Lowes was in second. I think he needs 2 points to wrap up the title at this race. So Sofuoglu might have to get a bit dirty if he wants to try and win this title back.
Well, he does have, as we've seen in the past, particularly with Eugene Laverty, full capability of doing that at Magny-Cours.
Then Christian Iden on the MV, he came in third, which was quite good for him.
Yep.
And then another surprise was Danny Webb,
who was absolutely
who was the second Honda. This is obvious. I think this is his third time on a 600. He's never ridden at MagniCore before. He had James Toseland in his box this weekend, which he said helped a lot. And then he also said that luckily Lowe's showed him round for a quick lap, which helped put him up in sixth. But that's still a very impressive result to even be able to stick with someone like Lowe's. And obviously, Webb is a very good wet weather rider, as we've seen in Moto 3 and 125s. So.
And he gave Simon Buckmaster something to smile about for a change.
Yeah, exactly, because that team's been struggling a bit.
Yep. So that's what we've got on tap for tomorrow, which will probably be today, or maybe even yesterday, depending upon when the show gets out.
Hopefully.
Yep. But that's from 90 Core. We also have some action going on at Silverstone this weekend, BSB, and you probably kept a little bit of an eye on that today as well. We had another Lowe's, the brother of Sam, looking in good condition, and then we had a gentleman in a stalwart and kind of the foundation of Moto or of BSB right now, took a tumble and still managed to get there.
Yeah, Shane Byrne had a pretty big crash. He had to be physically lifted onto the bike by his mechanics. Apparently had to plead with the medical staff to just let him do 6 laps. That's all he needed in qualifying. As long as he could do that, he'd be fine. And even in all that pain, he managed to put it on second. But he has to do another medical tomorrow to see if he's fit. So we'll see about that.
Yeah, Shaky's pretty good at making his way through medical. He'll smile and charm, and we'll see him on the bike tomorrow.
Yeah. And yeah. Then your countryman, PJ Jacobson, he continued his good form and put the bike in third ahead of Josh Brooks, his teammate, who's in fourth. And it's good to see PJ get some more speed at perhaps tracks he knows a bit more from his wildcards last year at the end of this year.
Exactly.
Good to have some Americans in series other than AMA that can actually be watched on television.
I think the big shocker of qualifying today was probably James Ellison.
Yeah, I'm not sure what his problem was, but he was right down the order.
All the way down in 18th. Ow.
Yeah. That's really bad.
But that's going to put...
Yeah, luckily because of BSB, he has a chance to qualify higher for the second race, but
right.
That first race, there's a lot of people to get through.
Yeah, well, and that might... It'll either cause some problems to getting the fastest laps or the fastest lap, or he may just close his eyes and hope for the best.
Yeah, shut your eyes and run deep into turn one.
Yep. But the rest of the middle of the pack seemed pretty normal. You did have an indication of the Bridewell Waters bit. Did we already talk about that? We did.
Yeah. So Bridewell was on the Yamaha. He was up in eighth, and then Josh Waters, his first time out on the Horsall Kawasaki, he was down in 15th, which is maybe not the best result, but who knows? Hopefully over the race, he'll be able to latch on to Ellison. Also in BSB news, we didn't mention this, but King Keo, as is affectionately known, managed to hurt himself in a motocross accident.
Yep.
So he is out, and therefore officially ending any chances he has of winning another BSB title, how rare that may have been. And he got replaced by Freddie Foray on the Samsung Honda. Freddie Foray does a lot of endurance riding and was in BSB for a bit, but the team he was with folded and all that sort of jazz.
That would be Freddie Foray from France.
Yes. Yeah, and when he was originally in BSB, he actually did some very funny YouTube videos of him trying to be British and that sort of thing. And he was down in 19th, so...
He should have studied under Guintoli.
Yeah.
if there's a Frenchman that knows how to be British, I think that would be Sylvain. The other thing I wanted to mention, too, was Indianapolis for their MotoGP round. There's been a lot of people that have given that track stick, including the riders, in some ways completely valid. It is a road course set inside of an oval, which is rarely ideal, even though that's a huge friggin' oval. It's a 2.5 mile oval. But the primary complaint of the riders, there were two primary complaints. Number one was the track surface, and there were multiple different types of tarmac and patches and things like that. Well, the entire road course infield is going to be not only repaved, the entire thing, end to end, with the only thing that won't be is the oval itself, and they spend two different periods, so there'll be essentially two types of tarmac, but the infield will all be brand new. On top of that, the riders were complaining about there was no flow to the course. And if you look at the old map of it, what you'll see is a whole bunch of 90-degree corners, which riders hate. It's just, it's boring and it's slow. And so what Indy did is they took a look at it in conjunction with Dorna, the FIM, and particularly with some information from Boris Caparossi, and they went about trying to get rid of all the 90-degree corners and introducing some flow into the circuit. And in doing so, I've seen the new map, and I've talked to a friend of ours, a friend of the show's, who has been listening to the show since day one. Hello, Mr. Kelly. Literally, since show one. And he passed on, and since then we've had a press release with a copy of the map. But it looks like they've done an admirable job in putting some flow back into the circuit. So I can't wait to see not only what the fans do and get a look at it and see what their impressions are, but particularly the riders next year. So it sounds like it's going to be good. They did not put in any elevation changes, which would have been cool. But then again, that can be really expensive.
Yeah.
Yeah. But in the meantime, they're on basically a 20-year plan to keep improving the circuit and going and going and going. And they've got a contract, I believe, at least through 2015, if not further. So I look forward to it. There's people that say, well, the circuit isn't that great. Well, it maybe wasn't, but the racing was always good. And on top of that, I've never been anywhere. Maybe the only comparison could be done to someplace like Mugello, where the whole town is all into the racing. Well, Indy gets like that. And so if you've never been, come. It's really cool. It's really fun. The entire town really puts it out. So that's my spiel for Indy. Good Lord, Harry, have we finished?
Oh, well, there's one more thing to touch on. This has kind of come about just today. But it turns out that originally, World Superbike next year was going to have, like BSB did a couple of years ago, a sub-Evo class in it.
Right.
So they were going to be quite closer to stock bikes, limited tuning and limited electronic kits. But now it's been announced that World Superbike is becoming full Evo.
Yeah, and they announced that today. Now, that was going to be for 2015, correct?
Yeah, that'll be 2015. So 2014 will still be that transitional period. But that's still a pretty big step.
Yeah.
Because obviously, since Dorna now owns both Superbikes and MotoGP, they've said they've wanted to distance it a fair bit. So
And especially with, I don't want to use the term dumbing down, but kind of trying to introduce more competition into each series when they're going to be reducing the technological advances in MotoGP to some extent, by limiting things with ECUs and lowering the amount of fuel that the teams can run and engines as well. A lot of this came from the manufacturers themselves. They're going to be holding MotoGP at a certain level, while if they didn't do something with World Superbike, they would continue to come up where perhaps at the same tracks they run on, the times would have been getting closer and closer. So I think in also trying to, perhaps in a failing manner, reduce the cost to the teams. They're trying, as you say, to create a bit of distance between the two. Now, a lot of fans don't like that, but if it creates closer and better racing, I'm not going to complain about it.
Yeah, same. I mean, technical specs, if it's good racing, I don't think technical specs should matter too much, but that's just my opinion at least.
Yeah. But then again, they've also got a whole year to change their minds.
Yeah, exactly. Who knows? Plus, who knows how many more teams will pull out or come back in? Or
clearly we need more people back into World Superbike, because the World Superbike grid has been shrinking over the years. We're basically a year ahead in the timetable in MotoGP for trying to make things more affordable and to allow a little bit more parity between the teams. I think you'll see those same kind of changes. And this is the first shot across the bow of you, if you will, with World Superbike to bring things together within each series. So, I don't know. It'll be interesting.
Yeah, I think, as you said, the next 2 years in both GP and World Superbike will be very interesting to see.
Yep. All right. That, I believe, is a wrap. That's a relatively short show with a ton of information in it. Again, we may have an interview. We may not. I don't know. But doesn't really matter. I do want to run through Motopod Fantasy League. I have yet to add you and Dave into this. I will at some
point. I wouldn't bother adding me. I don't think I've changed my team since it started.
Well, then that's a good way to shame you into doing it properly next year, isn't it? At the top of the Motopod Fantasy League, we do have a new leader since the last time we announced this. That'd be Mario Bosch. With Team Lopham Racing, holds the lead on 1,752. Well done, Mario. Nicky Malore has slipped down a little bit. In the host mini race, this is current as of today. Martin is in 51st, no change, so he's holding there. I am in 66th, I dropped three. And Jules is in 85th, and he's picked up one. We're all kind of pleased we're in the top 100. We got over 300 people in it, and boy, did I suck last year. So it's good to be doing a little bit better. Once again, I do want to thank everybody out there over the last 2 months, and I hope I've caught you up. If I missed you, do me a favor. Those were all the new folks that joined in, just so you know. Not, those weren't the recurring ones, because that list would be longer. But thank you for donating and helping out Motopod. It helps us get to the races. It helps us, pay the fees to the sanctioning bodies, which we're still trying to catch up on. Very, very difficult. And many other things, including bringing stickers to the races for you guys. If you would like to communicate with us, please write into motopod@motopodcast.com. That will go to myself, Harry, Martin, Len, Jules, Dave, probably a few other people, I don't know, and we will hopefully write back to you very quickly. And with that, Harry, welcome to joining me on the show.
Yeah, lovely to talk to you for a longer period of time.
Yeah, we just chit-chatted before we brought you on and threw you in the deep end. I think you're doing a great job. Thank you very much. I'm going to try and see if I can't get us a little bit more organized so we can get you guys the show on a more quick schedule, regular basis, hopefully get these things out by Friday or so. In the meantime, thanks for listening, and we will talk to you all next week.
Yeah. Bye.
Yeah, like that. Yeah. Bye. All right. Thanks, Ty. Bye.